Good evening, everyone. I love the way Eddie it lets that bell ring out. We can just be with that sound for so long. So this evening, I want to give part two of a talk on the what we are calling the 12 links of interdependent co-arising, though it goes by different names. I noticed after I gave my talk last week that that a number of people said it'd be nice to go into that a bit more. And I thought that we could do that together because this is a really fundamental and important teaching in Buddhism, one of Buddha's most important teachings, in that it gives rise to what we might describe in future iterations as emptiness, it's not actually a concept, but we'll use that word for now. This word, this concept of dependent co-origination is so central to us in our practice, because for dependent co-origination, interdependent co-arising to be true, nothing can have any fixed intrinsic essence of its own. And we can experience this and see this and recognize this in our practice as we recognize impermanence. I thought it would be interesting to dive a little more into this topic and explore it. I want to start with a little story. I remember reading a book by Trungpa that had this story about a monkey, a monkey who is trapped in a room. And this room, for my purposes, has no windows and no doors. And the monkey can see no way out. We might describe it as a gateless barrier, no exit in existential terms. The monkey sees these four walls trapping him and seeks for a way out of this space, some kind of escape. So many of us have found ourselves in similar circumstances in life, that we feel trapped in a particular place in our life, and there seems to be no possibility. We feel stuck, and the world doesn't feel open, but we feel claustrophobic and closed in, perhaps without fully recognizing that our own heart minds have something to do with this. So what does the monkey do? The monkey sits and studies, eventually calms, and sits and looks and studies these walls around him, or her if you like, and eventually realizes that the walls are in fact the jungle itself. The monkey can simply get up and walk into the jungle and therein sees bananas and vines and swings about and plays. And it suddenly, what appeared to be a wall, becomes a life of possibility. There was actually no change. The jungle was the wall. But at first, the monkey felt trapped and later felt free. We might describe these two conditions as samsara and nirvana. And our practice is learning that in these spaces where we are feeling trapped in life, that we are also free. Now, how is this so? The teaching of the 12 links is one way for us to think about this. 12 links, when viewed from one perspective, create what we might describe as samsara. When viewed from another perspective, they are the material of nirvana. The actual material doesn't change. The content of our life, we don't necessarily expect it to change very much. It's how we relate with the content of our lives that shifts in some way through our practice. The 12 links. One metaphor I've used for this, by the way, in the past is the whole notion of looking at a wave. and only seeing a wave in that moment, only seeing what we describe as relative truths, doesn't mean it's not true, but that's all we see. And then seeing, looking more deeply and seeing water and seeing its connection to the entire ocean, that it isn't a separate fixed existence, but it actually exists as part of some much greater whole. The 12 links, when conditioned by the quote, deluded mind, and of course they always are conditioned by the deluded mind, that's what it is to be a human being, are, we might, let me go through them a bit and explain them a tiny bit more than last time. Ignorance is the first. Now, not, you could start anywhere in this link. It's the first I'm going to talk about tonight. We might describe ignorance as a belief in fixed essences. Might describe it as a belief in a fixed sense of self, intrinsic sense of self. Now, ignorance, when we look deeply into, just like the monkey, looking at what it feels are walls surrounding it and trapping it and containing it, when we look deeply into anything that we think is fixed, an independent essence, we find that it's actually a dependent arising. So, for example, with the sense of self, as it arises, we might believe in it. I am good, I am bad, and cling to these definitions of ourselves that are arising. Those are the most simplistic forms, but we know they get very complex and nuanced. And we might cling to them, we might defend them, we might push them away. And all of that activity, all of that reactivity is based on some fundamental belief that that sense of self is real, is permanent, is innate, refers to something. It's not just a sense of self. And with practice, we learn that senses of self come and go. Thich Nhat Hanh uses the metaphor of a rainbow. Out of causes and conditions, some rain, some sunlight, particular angle, a particular sense of self arises. But it doesn't have an essence. It's not a substance. And so it shapeshifts, moves across the open sky, and dissipates. The more that we practice, the more we look into the walls that we think are real, the hard, fast walls that we think surround us, the more we see that they are not fixed essences, and we are liberated from all the effort that it requires to protect that sense of self, to defend that sense of self, to escape that sense of self. It's unnecessary. All that work isn't necessary because everything comes and goes on its own. Everything goes its own way. So we don't need to be quite so troubled about these senses of self. So in that way, ignorance is transformed into understanding. Now again, the sense of self continues to arise. The content doesn't just stop happening, but we're relating with it differently now. And in this way, ignorance is transformed into understanding. And understanding is nirvana. It's a release from the attachment and defenses, etc., to this sense of self, and instead just the watching of the sense of self coming and going. It's recognizing that it's essentially a mirage, that we don't exist as separate selves after all. Now, each of these interdependent links, these 12 links described, and by the way, in some iterations there are 10, and in others there are more, but in the most commonly taught, there are 12. Each of these is transformable in a similar way. The most essential aspect of sort of what we call transformation is continuing to simply pay attention. So if at any point you feel like, I can't do all that, I'm having to transform this and that and the other thing, this is too much to keep track of. Well, good, you don't have to keep track of it, because it all takes care of itself. All we have to do is look closely at whatever is arising, and understanding emerges. Impermanence emerges by itself. We don't have to create it. So the next is what we call volitional action. There are many different versions of this, but volitional action is acting when we are in a samsaric state, we might describe, feeling attached to particular outcomes, feeling attached to acting for ourselves alone, for example. Great aspiration, it can be transformed into great aspiration, which is our bodhisattva vow, that we don't live for this separate sense of self, that we live for all beings. Now this, again, doesn't necessarily have to happen through me making this great effort to change what I'm living for, although the precepts are a great guide in this. They're deeply powerful and useful in our liberation, because we are no longer living just for me, me, me. Now we're living for something ever-present that is bigger than some concept of just me, 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 and my future. We're living for each other. Why? Because you are here. We just pay attention and realize what is present, and that's what we live for. The next step in these interdependent links is consciousness. This is a kind of complicated one that actually includes all of them, but they all include all of them. But to keep it simple for tonight, consciousness, we might say one of the activities of consciousness is to divide, to judge, to name. When we talk about consciousness as thinking and not purely not as awareness, but when we think about it as thinking, this is what the thinking mind does. It divides, it judges, it names. And similarly, it can be transformed into wisdom, which is described as the great mirror. This is, again, a matter of attention. We reflect all beings at once. We don't need to make this true. Our awareness is vast and wide, boundless, we say. It's already true that your awareness is reaching out across the world to take in my voice somehow. Quite a miracle. You look up into the sky and the stars are part of your mind. You are not divided. Your mind is very much includes all of the universe, all of the world. And how do we see this? Again, through paying attention, through looking closely, through noticing that the mind that divides and judges also bears witness, is open and spacious, composed of non-self elements, composed of the sounds in a room, composed of my voice. The mind and body, number four. Again, this has a little bit to do with identification. I identify with this body as mine, me, mine. And this mind as me and mine. And I can look at it differently, can't I? I can realize that this body is a dependent arising. I can realize that it's made of the rain, that it's made of the earth, the food that we eat, that is made of the air that we breathe. And this body that I think of as me and mind, as this separate entity, suddenly is not separate, is made of all beings and is part of all beings. The six sense organs, this is number five. Of course, this is our senses plus our thoughts, right? And again, we can think of the organs, the senses, and their objects as being two different things. There's my senses, which are in me, and then there's everything that I sense that is outside of me. Notice the enormous gap that happens. There's me, and there's everything else. When the sense objects are not thought of as separate, this sensory world is enlightenment. Me and mine are just extra words. They don't mean anything. This as exactly this, that as exactly that, self and other the same. After all, my senses are made up of things that are not my senses. When I see something, I don't say I see my seeing. What I see is my seeing. Contact. Number six. Contact is perhaps another way of saying number five. It's the encounter. And again, you'll notice that how so many of these are like this. And this can be transformed into mindfulness of contact. The mindfulness dissolves the barriers between things. When I eat my food and I'm actually deeply tasting it, the taste is what's present. It is not, there's no gap between the food and myself in that moment. Feeling. We can think, we often classify our feelings into good and bad. In mindfulness of feelings, we have feelings like rainbows without essence or fireworks in the sky. These things that show up in our bodies and in our minds explode, create color, and just disappear without any real fixed essence. But we can become very attached to feelings. And this cycle is very important in the 12 links, this next part. When we start thinking of some feelings as good and others as bad and categorizing in that way, we can become quite attached to particular feelings, and out of this, craving is born. This is a longing to make something permanent that can never be permanent. Craving, the longing for pleasure to be here forever. And the moment that it goes away, we lock right back into that cycle of craving, and this is where addiction comes from. And we continue to act on that craving, wishing to make what we felt at one point permanent. With careful attention, we can see that we can never make any feeling permanent. And while that may sound bad at first, it's also beautiful and liberating, because that's true of our suffering as well. So there's no need to escape it. This craving can also be transformed into generosity, openness. We might say that craving might happen. We may desire something positive. We may desire justice. We may desire, but when we get lost in it, imagine that anything can be a permanent condition. We find impossibility there. If, however, we engage in this work with no attachment to outcomes, this is a big point. If we can act on our desire without attachment to outcomes, this can liberate us to stay engaged, for example, in efforts towards social justice or environmental justice, without giving up and becoming discouraged. We're not attached to a fixed outcome. We're just living fully in each moment and giving what we can give. And in that way, craving is transformed into the immeasurable minds, generosity, openness, taking action on behalf of others. This enormous possibility becomes present for us. Grasping, of course, is very much connected to craving. And this is, again, trying to hold on to things, feeling very attached. The monkey who reaches down into the bottle to hold on to a piece of fruit and holds on to it. And once he makes the fist, can't get his hand out of the bottle anymore because his fist is too wide, but won't let go. Doesn't realize, I can just let go and be free again. So this has a lot to do with our willingness to let go, which again goes back to that notion of let go of what? Let go of the desire for permanence. The last three are coming to be, birth, old age, and death. All of these are based on a belief in what we might describe, Thich Nhat Hanh describes as signs. We believe in the labels, the way that we describe things. We believe in things having a self, and therefore that self can live and die. As if there were a singular self that lived all the way through and that ultimately dies. Now, of course, there is life and death. That's a relative truth. It doesn't disappear. All the elements of samsara remain, but they are transformed in the way that we see things into wondrous being, wisdom of no birth, and the wisdom of no death, into nirvana. And here we come into contact with the notions of interbeing, or the unborn, undying thusness. These things are somewhat beyond words to describe, but in the simplest of terms, we might say it's all that which is beyond categorization, all that which is beyond thinking. It's still the same stuff. It's not some separate realm that we discover. It's my body. It's my hands. It's the light shining down. It's the feeling of the air on my skin. It's my breath, my feelings, all of it. Before we label it, before we discriminate, simple thusness, presence. It's the jungle, it's your life. What is the jungle for you right now? What are the four walls for you? In the simplest sense, you actually can just look around and see. It's the room you're in. It's the computer you're looking at. This is the jungle, right here, us, we're in it. You and me together. And sometimes it feels like a little box that's containing and limiting us. Sometimes it feels like this jungle that we're in has no possibility. Sometimes, and through all of these ways that we interact with it, through the notions that we have of self, self and other, through our attachments, our grasping, etc., we suffer. And this possibility to relate with the very same life, the very same material. There is birth and death. There are relative truths, but we aren't limited to those relative truths. We are also unborn, inseparable. We can actually practice. And this is what practice is. Continuing to look closely at what the true nature of reality is. To not necessarily believe all the divisions that our mind makes. To recognize that they aren't false. But they aren't necessarily the ultimate truth either. They are relative truths. They are dependent truths. Dependent on relationships. We can open beyond our reactions, our grasping. Recognize its impermanence. Recognize no fixed essences to which we can grasp. This is liberating. And it generates, perhaps most importantly, a kind of deep compassion for those who are suffering from the very same attachments as we are. This attention that we practice in this close looking generates a deep appreciation for things just as they are becoming. This appreciation for me is one of the greatest motivators for practice, the greatest inspiration for practice. This remarkable sense of the wonder of life. that's quite beyond all the categories that my mind is creating all the time. And that's always available to us. Samsara and nirvana, not actually two separate things, all the same material, each available to us in every single moment, not as an either or, both arising simultaneously. In fact, neither arising. Both are just this, just this. One describes the conditions that are present when we are really suffering. And the other describes what it is for us to look closely at our suffering and recognize its true nature. And even in that suffering, to find liberation. Thank you, everyone.